Blog Talk Radio.
Sonic Effects. It's a good place to be. It's, what are we looking at? The 9th of October this year. Lots of things. Everything changes. It's wonderful that masonry gives us so much conversation starter. When you think about it, the likes of me, Where else do you have this opportunity to, you know, combine, to drift into thoughts about the cabal and, you know, and physics and history and philosophy? Where else would you find it? And then, you know, we have to. I don't know if there's still a debate about this, but we're on to. Into some remarkable areas in physics, and our sciences are doing, you know, our scientists are bringing us information that is startling. And at first, it's like this new space telescope is giving us images, and we're just left to observe. It's like a gallery. Not necessarily breaking down what it is we're seeing, but that we're seeing it. It's taking us back into a theory that we're looking back into time, and that we can calculate how long it has been. And what's happening in the ether, this accelerated expansion. But to say that we can comprehend all of this, for now, I think some can. But by all means, give us the images, send us the information. Let those of us who can benefit from it and are receptive to that, absorb it, whether it's firsthand or secondhand. Let us absorb that information. What it tells us? Well, you've heard the wagging tongues say all, you know, unless you can tie a dollar to a study, then it's absolutely useless. In other words, their world they've monetized their world. So how do you know, you make that kind of declaration? How do you know that a philosophy, generally picking on the humanities, and this comes from a myth that was begun some years ago that all the sciences were golden, were just the effort, and everything else was meaningless. So put all your effort into the so-called hard sciences, except that the hard sciences were all based on the fundamentals that were generated by the humanities. And not to become too starry-eyed about the notion, how do you monetize understanding? Well, if you think about it, somebody is telling you that all of this is just malarkey. It's just supposition and opinion. Well, isn't math? When does it become fact? When there's some continuity, when there's reliability and validity to the findings. Well, you would be hard pressed to suggest to me that philosophy hasn't crossed that threshold. The same threshold. And even when I'm listening to the physicist developing theory and experiments after exhausting their capacities, they sit down with the philosophers. What's that about, eh? What's that about? Do we not want to? Is it that we don't want to know because I can't, I'm feeble-minded. I can't handle two or three opposing bits of information in my mind at the same time. That if only it was two or three. It comes in bundles, doesn't it, these days? Then we're just presuming that my limit is the limit because I don't understand it. If only the world was that calamitous. When I was looking, you get to do a deep dive. I've stepped out of the shallow end of the pool. Deep dive into a very comforting, a very mysterious kind of a field of study, the Kabbalah, where you're transcending, you're looking for, sort of spiritual understanding, you're looking for material understanding, the material world. Some people who study have discovered answers. Now, before the world gets up on its hind legs, and there's others, there's similar fields of study in Islam and in Christianity from obscure times, and that's best left to the scholars out there amongst you. But it isn't the effort. I think we do ourselves a disservice offering up this type of thinking, or even if I may be not so disingenuous to say that to offer up Freemasonry, it's not the promise. It's not so much the notion that it's all very mechanical and fact based, and that's how transformation happens. It's the questions. What becomes very apparent is the questions that we begin, that occur when men are receptive to a knowledge base that isn't tainted by ego. These ideas are all an assault on that juggernaut ego. you know, I'm right because I say I'm right, basically. You know, that's what we're saying. You know. And yes, you know, play with it. Jump into the Freudian descriptions of what that is. Call it will. We can will it to happen. Well, you know, those self-help books have come and gone. Otherwise, we'd be willing away poverty and hunger and homelessness. We just will it away. There's no magical thing. Is there a magical thinking? I'll leave that with you, you know. And what is it and how does it apply? Well, maybe it does apply the way happiness does. It's not just a mood. It's a memory. Why would that ever be important? Well, more and more you'll find out, if you don't already know, that memories are sometimes all that you have. What's important? What do you recall? So today we're going to step across that, like that. I don't know if this is a chasm or just a fine line where we're looking at playing with this idea that if we understand, you know, if truly we care about you and you care about us and we care about each other and we're part of this, you know, fraternal promise. It'd be like saying, if you enroll in my university, in this university, you have you obviously have potential or you wouldn't be through the door. And with your entrance comes this promise of great things by the very entrance. Now, how do you get your ego around? How does a proud man get his head around that? Oh, well, and you've seen them, I'm sure. The men and women that just put their feet up because they're escaping the tyranny of parenting, you know. They put their feet up and relax, and they get too loose because they're enjoying, for the first time in their life, they're enjoying making their own decisions and out beyond, underneath you. You've seen them, and it happens quite frequently. It's like an escape from childhood, yeah. If you are in a state of confusion, which I think is quite frequent for people, although you know you've met the type that act as if they have answers to everything, and good God bless them, you know, we want them to feel fulfilled. And if they claim they have answers to anything that comes, or if you have a problem, you can come with, you know, and I can honestly tell you that there comes a day when that falls, the shallowness of that kind of thinking falls through. How could that be? Wouldn't the world be a better place if we had that kind of confidence? You would say that. I think that's quite reasonable, but without judgment, it's like having a world of law without justice. How do we even begin? Well, just don't even go there. Don't ask those questions because they don't fit the model. They don't fit with prideful behavior. I can't begin to, we can begin to talk about how this has happened, but how it occurs. But I think that's less important than determining whether there's anything that we can do about that individually. And right now, my goodness, there is. Right now, we have a delightful return to a time, and I'm not really sure it's ever gone away, where there's been a controversy about facts. And right now, and it's always been, I think it's always lingered in the background, you know, these kind of, you can't kill the ideas, you know, they don't just disappear. But the idea that if I can come up with, if I can fabricate some idea, some notion or explanation, big on opinion and not so much on fact. Yeah, sort of like you're talking to a group of, your typical 14 to 16-year-olds, you know, very, you know, full of bravado and confidence as they need. And they're making these statements for the first time. You know, they got to prove themselves. But, you know, fact-based, you know, not a big consideration. But the opinions are profound. You know, if you want a solution to anything, you know, that's the group you want to talk with. They have solutions to everything. But they also come, it also comes with this self-consciousness and the sense of bravado, intellectual or emotional, I don't know. But it comes with that sense of privacy, too, you know, and rationality and reason. We need to be able to understand. We want to be able to understand, because this state of a state of confusion or chaos, it drains our energy, and it's a state that even our mind or a brain doesn't like. It likes things very efficient use of energy, efficient. So we're not wasting that calculating process, that potential, doing repetitive kinds of tasks. So son of a gun will even fill in it, even for reasons that we don't really understand. It can even fill in the blanks, you know, repeated memories. And we don't know. Once upon a time, the purists might say, or the pious might say, people begin to lie. They fabricate and begin to lie. Well, that's assuming a hell of a lot that it is unfounded so far. How do you know that? Because that's your impression, that we fill in when science has taken a look at this, and all that means is we're stepping away from what's subjective, looking at what's objective. We're finding that the mind is able to do things that we still don't begin to understand. It can fill in knowledge, can fill in experiences. And is it all accurate? Well, then what's accurate? What's the accurate reflection? It's like, what's history? Is history only written by the victors? But what about the rest? What about all the other bits and pieces of what was going on at the time that wasn't just about victory or success? The meaning. And along comes, I don't think we're anymore, we can say that we're, you know, striding proudly down the path. Maybe once upon a time, the men of intellect and capability would be a draw. You know, of course, put those kind of people together, and it's going to draw attention because they're not going to waste their time, and they're on the edge of advances. Of exploration, if you will, on many different levels. And masonry comes along with that. Are we receptive to it? Well, that's one of those questions, isn't it? You could fill in all the answers you want, but are you receptive to this new body of thinking? Not so much answers. You know, we don't. It doesn't give us a bundle. It's not self-help. But it is in a way, but it's not. We don't grab it and look for the answers that it gives us. It gives us a way of thinking that can produce understanding. What in the world were we thinking, that understanding would become important or valued more and more as life went on? Well, we know that. That this takes a second. If your child's belly is swollen from malnutrition, and women are being beaten and treated as second class citizens, we know that this sense of value falls by the way. But it doesn't disappear. We know that our tolerance certainly is speculative Freemasons. We know that our tolerance for pain and suffering ought never to be that great. We have to be able to prevail, but we can, we do have a capacity to think about the well-being, the greater good beyond our own need. We can think about the disadvantaged, and we can do something even that the people themselves may not be able to do. That's where the care, that's where great care needs to be employed. We need to be very, very careful to ensure that we are examining these types of things, these types of actions, with a clear sense of ethics. We can't just declare ourselves, we can, but you know, it's a bit hypocritical to declare ourselves to be living according to a higher moral standard without understanding really what that is. It's a bit. It's like, welcoming somebody and not even being concerned about mentioning saying his name properly. Disrespect or respect, you call, you make the call. So, is there an end to this? Well, I don't think, at least there may be, but we haven't found it yet. Ebb and flow, well, we're in that ebb and flow. The energy is continuing. The energy that began masonry hundreds of years ago, boots on the ground, is still with us. Still with us. Do you notice it? Do you find it? Well, that's on you. That's not on the craft. Oh, are you thinking that somebody ought to have pointed out everything that you needed to know? Well, we point out within the craft, there's a mindset. You can actually live a good life as a Mason while you're sorting out meaning. Yeah. There's so much. There's a great range. It's just these different orbits of study. Any one of them can be a complementarity of the other. But to study them and exhaust them, I don't know if that word really fits anymore. It's like you may feel it sometimes like a gadfly. You're studying in one particular area, and then you notice this link with another area. So, and it continues, those links continue. And then as you sit back one day and you ask the question, what are you learning? Well, it is confrontive to realize that your own thought may be very bleak, that it has, you can blame, like, it's like the wags that will sit down and try and convince you that all higher education is wasteful. That the arts are wasteful. Why would our culture? Well, we don't really talk about culture because with a certain group of people, it's meaningless, or it has less meaning. But it doesn't stop it from having bearing. We move through. We move on. And the questions are most important, I think, are your questions. And if a man gets to the door and never asks that question, well, that's not a failing of the craft. That's not a failing of the craft. It may be something that we can improve on. And we certainly, I think, are finding ourselves where I am, at that point of realizing this, for hundreds of years, we've been sitting on an understanding of an improved quality of life. Not just as a vague concept, but with actual tasks. That will that have the potential to enlighten. They always have the potential, because they're not conclusive. What's conclusive is when you pick them up and what you do with them, what you and I do with them. That's and I don't although I've seen some people try to declare that they have reached the pinnacle, I'm never sure what the world that means. There's always another mountaintop. There's always another challenge out there. And the loveliness, and you've experienced this, of people being diligent and doing things for their community and for other people. And as they age, there's still the keenness. You know, the mind is very keen. They still are men that are inspired. And being around them, all we can do is be around them, and we can present you and me to that atmosphere. But whether it has an effect on us or whether we become resentful or self-conscious, oh my goodness, these people are so smart. What could I possibly contribute? Well, that's self-confidence speaking there. And so you make of it what you will. There's no handcuffs here. There's no doctrine here. You make of it what you will. But this is an environment where it is safe to ask the questions. And when you see somebody that might mock or laugh, that's saying far more about them than it is about you. Yeah. So sit back. This will be a good program, I think, today. Of course, I'm enjoying it. I enjoyed designing it, but you be the judge. You be the judge and jury on this. Let's see if we can be persuasive with a bit of conversation here, a bit of music. Sit back with a cup of whatever it is you love sipping, and let me try again. Here's a horn player, J.J. Johnson, trombone player. And he's sitting in with Joe Pass. I think you're going to like this. How long has this been going on? Oh, yeah. Thank you. No, let me, let me freshen up whatever you have. And we'll sit back together and listen. Share a few minutes. The commentary today, a bit transparent, I think, for attentive listeners. The reason that I wrote this, living life into masonry. The start of our conversation. This isn't a conclusion. And I started today with, to understand masonry requires lived life. It has bits that require a slow, deep read because metaphor is often layered. There are pieces that you want to have on your bed table for years, so it's available to infect your thinking. You want to be able to pick it up and read and, you know, recall a piece. Refresh. It's not surprising readers struggle with meaning. I think anyone trying to get a so-called Masonic education will already have some familiarity with the classics. The genius of Shakespeare, Cervantes, Proust, Melville, Dante. We all know, he will know, about a rawness of life through Tolstoy's War and Peace, one of the greatest novels ever written. It sits on my shelf because it contains so much description of thinking, his delicate explorations of Freemasonry. Yeah. Agreed, it is easier to appreciate some, but remember, Ulysses was offered up by James Joyce defiantly to readers as a 17-year read. Makes me laugh. Not Adam, but it's breathtaking. So much experimentation. It is hard, you know, I guess that's what makes somebody one of the finest Irish writers. It's hard. Every chapter an experiment in literary convention. Freemasonry is indispensable, if you will allow, to a man who values his private mysteries, the private mysteries we absorb from written language. Add philosophy, history, metaphysics to grasping meaning. Masonry isn't restrained by borders or language, and neither should you. Or me. There are rich rewards following Scottish, French, Czech, and German journeys into critical thinking. This takes nothing away from English masonry. And remember, there is always more to read that will change the thinking of open-minded types. Imagine a life in which imagination and fact flows into the virtuous life of a Freemason. Keep asking yourself why. Why are certain things boring? Why do some works excite and resonate? Read and talk about your work as often as you can, using the lexicon. Continue to indulge. Commit to meta-learning, learning how to learn, learn the art. And of course, visit Masonic Effects. And don't be surprised when understanding becomes an inspiration itself. All of a sudden, we will... If we steep ourselves, it's like that tea bag, you know, you get a nice, or a tea, you steep it. And it just reaches that point where it's just so flavorful and full, you know the point. If you do that with what you're learning and what you're reading in masonry, there comes a time when you begin to see associations with those ideas. We could say, is there an ownership to the idea? No, there's no ownership to them, but there's an organization to them, and masonry does that for us. Helps us reshuffle and recognize certain formats and the scaffolding. We can uh, it 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 in itself begins to transfer into our daydreams, into our thinking about what we're seeing and what we're saying. And it's there. It becomes a presence. Oh, you would worry that this would be brainwashing with the enemy. Yeah, of course it is. If it's the concept is that man can brainwash himself. Can you do that? Probably not. This is also learning, awareness. And I guess in and of itself, you could examine that whole process and then wonder where it's taking us. What are we learning? Are we finding truths? And if they were truths, would we know them if they hit us over the head as we popularly hear? Roll up your sleeves. You have talent, but not because we're going to flatter you. Oh, you're wonderful. Here, put on these robes, and you're going to be worthy of the day. Well, it's more like realizing that some people will struggle, that I have to prove myself. Other people will take it for granted. It's no struggle. Of course, you have to prove your work all the time. It moves on. And if you're not used to working at the edge where there's no certainty, where somebody hasn't necessarily gone before, well, don't go and sit down. Leave room for somebody else. And realize that what you're going through is kind of natural, but that when you get your feet under, and yes, it's possible to get your feet under yourself, that it becomes transferable here, like this. This is Stan Getz from his At Large album.
On every vacation at a verbal home, there's someone like you.
What has happened here? What has happened here? Oh, my goodness. I don't understand.
Thank you.
That worked. At least it did here. Deep breath. Poem of the week. This is a form of poetry we've not had on the program in all these many years. I guess maybe I was too timid. You know, who would possibly be able to learn? You make the assumption that people that would tune into Masonic Effects would certainly be completely disinterested. Poetry would have absolutely no meaning. It would be something for sissies, something that was effeminate. Hmm. Little do we know, you know, if you could put your head in the sand, not pay any attention to history or meaning, then by all means. But apparently, listeners, if share an interest in learning, opening up a different part of our mind, and we're receptive to the attention, that detail, the nuanced conversation that goes on by very brave people that will say, this is what I notice. Not because, you know, somebody wrote it down and told me this is what I should notice, but this is what I notice. This is what I notice about clouds or daffodils or storms or death, you know. And they begin to help us fill in the blanks of our own thinking. This is a style of poetry that is called a villanelle. Yeah. And it reflects, that's the format, but it reflects a different aesthetic movement in poetry that it's referred to as the decadent movement. And it was very short lived. But it focused on autonomy of art and then the need for sensationalism and melodrama and egocentricity and bizarre. This is what it was doing. Here I'm sharing the poetry today, the poem Villanelle of His Lady's Treasures. And yes, the topics of this group were not always very palatable. They looked at this was I don't know if I could say it was a rebuttal to romanticism, where poetry all of a sudden was trying to influence and elicit emotional response. And this group of writers said, no, there's more, you know. It was particularly grounded in France. If you have any poetry of Baudelaire, he was a practitioner, perhaps the foremost. They discussed things that were taboo. Wouldn't this have been popular in the 60s? It was like, you know, they were our great-great-grandfathers, and here they were talking about this. How dare them? You know, why didn't they wait for us? So their topic, like, they talked about death. Who wants to talk about that? And depression? No, that didn't exist. That's for losers. Deviant sexualities? That's only for salacious idiots with a candle in the middle of the night, you know? But these were serious-minded people. And I won't get into too much of that. We're going to tuck into the Villanelle. And this is from Ernest Dowson. He was born in 1867, same year Canada was formed, a long time ago. And yes, he was well educated, but it didn't come easily for him particularly. And this poem, he draws on influences. You can always see, like you and I, when we walk around, we're influenced by things. Are we aware of those influences? So hopefully. But this was from Latin poetry. So you'll forgive the implication of Horace, the vitae summa brevis sem non vitae cohan longa, and which means the brevity of life forbids us to entertain hopes of long duration. Mm-hmm. Sort of get, okay, so it's your round, Ernest. go on. Boy, bring us back a short one with that, and we'll pick up on that idea. We're you know, I'm worried about you, Ernest. Boy, you're a lovely man. The Villanelle, 19 lines, and see what it contains. See what it's considered aggressive. I took her dainty eyes as well as silken tendrils of her hair, and so I made a Villanelle. I took her voice, a silver bell, as clear as song, as soft as prayer. I took her dainty eyes as well. It may be, said I, who can tell, these things shall be my less despair. And so I made a Villanelle. I took her whiteness virginal and her cheek two roses rare. I took her dainty eyes as well. And I said, it may be possible her image from my heart to tear, and so I made a Villanelle. I stole her laugh, most musical. I wrought it, artful care. I took her dainty eyes as well, and so I made a Villanelle. The bodily treasures represent all the elements the lover most desired. And bringing them into a poem results in his less despair. The whiteness and the purity, yes, they have been repositioned as poetic material. But it's an uncomfortable poem, and it's an unusually revealing statement of the body-snatching art in which all good writers seem to engage. You know. What do you think? The decadent movement. Yeah, check it out. Oscar Wilde, you know, that kind of be very brave. When you need the courage to stand up to injustice, I guess. Here. This is Bill Charlotte Trio. It's at the Village Vanguard, a very famous jazz spot. It's called Autumn in New York, Autumn in the City. If you've ever been there in the fall, you know. And if you're not, drift with me to those streets, to the temperature, the smells, and you know, somebody roasting chestnuts on the corner for a buckle, a bed egg. Thank you. I know a lot of the, you know, a lot of this music, you can just drift off. You can just let it flow through you, can't you? Can't you? Speaking about flow through, this is we're at the part of the show where we talk a little bit about history, about influences. This is we're going to talk about the first known lodge of men and women anywhere in Europe. It was in The Hague. That's not the important part. The important part is how thinking had changed to allow that to happen, without you know, apology or some kind of posturing. This was a period where there was a common interest. It's also around that time where women were being given citizenship. Hard to believe. Now, we still see vestiges of this, the inequality toward women today, even in many of our cultures. And it's work unfinished. It's work unfinished around the world. And will it change? Yeah, it's inevitable. You know that. It's just how and when. And how it will probably be a vehicle of that kind of thinking mode. We're talking about, you know, the there was a prohibition. We talked about it last week, but quite a clear prohibition about the profane, and that was loosened. And there must have been some compelling reasons for that to happen. So if we take a look at them, it tells us more about the boundaries of Masonic culture and then the boundaries around these enclaves of enlightened minds. Would you recognize that enclave within your district or your own lodge or, you know, our Grand Lodge? And this is the movement that was happening we're back to 1751 in The Hague. And the Grand Master of the Netherlands, Joost Gerard, Baron von Wassenaar, initiated a lodge for both men and women and signed its Livre de Constitution, possibly in recognition of this unique break with tradition and the special patronage of the Baron. The lodge took his Christian name as its own, Le Loge de Joost. This is the first known lodge of men and women anywhere in Europe. And The Hague was not an inappropriate setting for such a cosmopolitan gathering. It had a population of no more than 35,000 in the mid-18th century. This medium-sized Dutch city was, in fact, one of the most cosmopolitan in Western Europe. As a Scottish visitor put it, The Hague is a charming, agreeable place for one who wants to be in the world. It seems to be the center of Europe, where you meet people of rank from other countries, where politeness cements them all together. I love that idea. It's us. This ambiance was created by the diplomatic corps, the vast publishing industry, the governmental institutions, and the theater in residence. The Comédie Française, which enjoyed a well-earned international reputation. The actresses and actors of the comedy joined with William Bentinck and various other gentlemen and one gentlewoman to create the first mixed lodge or lodge of adoption, as lodges that admitted women and men of equal numbers came to be known. We can imagine that it may have taken a great deal of politeness to cement this experiment in sociability. The origin of the term adoption to describe lodges for women is shrouded in mystery. Some clue may lie in the way the word was used as a verb. Brothers always referred to themselves as having been made Freemasons or having been received into the order. in the few records we have from sisters where they reminisce about their initiation, they speak of having been adopted. The term may reminisce about their initiation to speak of having been adopted. The term may have been partially and purposefully to conjure up the adoption of children into a family where by nature they would not normally have been placed. Once again, the term, whether purposefully or not, implied the domestic unit. And in this instance, held together by sentiment rather than by an accident of birth. However they got there, the sisters of Les Loges du Juste were unique for the early and detailed records they left behind. The manuscript records of du Juste have the lodge's constitution along with a complete membership list. And they also provide a set of initiation rituals. More of that next week. Wow. Does it matter? Depends what question you ask, gentlemen, ladies, gentlemen. What question do you ask? What question, what information do you need to know? Wraps up the show for this week. I don't know. Any psychological transformation happening out there? I hope. I hope you're doing well. I hope you'll continue to do well. We've passed the autumnal equinox. We're into moving toward the solstice in December. And everything is in balance. Everything is in balance around. Including you and I, although we do, we have that tendency to lose track of these things, but we're distractible little creatures. Maybe we're not so alert like we're little meerkats, you know, just pop up and look around. Maybe we're not. Maybe we tend to slumber like old bears in the winter. Here we have winter in the four seasons. Why would I bring that up without having a piece of Vivaldi to play. We'll do that next week. For all the goblins and ghouls, we're coming up into a magical time of year with the Halloween, and we still seem to be resilient. The core of masonry is remarkable. And if we ever tend to stray too much from those core beliefs, it just pulls us back. It's got a gravity. It just pulls us in. And we can find our footing and move on. We move on. So as we enjoy and acknowledge, there are many ways to practice masonry. But from the lessons today, remember what cements us with all these different practices. I'm saying could I possibly know right from wrong, you know, if I have not thought or given it much thought. We can be cemented by politeness, and we ought to be able to do that for ourselves. Thank you very much for tuning in. In the next couple of days, commit those acts of random Masonic kindness and include yourself in that. And I'll look forward to being with you and sitting in again soon. Bye for now.